Good morning. It being 8:30, I am calling to order this meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the committee, and welcome back to all for the 2022 legislative session. A reminder that this meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. And I want to direct the attention of the members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find the committee's agenda and meeting materials, et cetera, and a lot of useful stuff there. So we're going to start, as usual, by having the clerk take the roll. And so this will be Mr. Doslin's first chance to do that. So Mr. Doslin, please call the roll.
Good morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, vice chair.
Present.
Representative Franson.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Damon.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Present.
Representative Kotiza Witum.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wozlowick.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Doslin, and thank you all. We have a full house today, and nice to have full attendance to see everyone here. We are joined today by a couple of new staff members that I want to make sure to acknowledge and introduce. I'm really excited to have them on board. We have a new committee administrator, a new committee legislative assistant, and then a new House fiscal staff representative on the education side. Emily Adrians, who was our House fiscal staff member in that area, is now the chief fiscal analyst for the House. And so really excited for her on that promotion. And so I'm going to start with Ms. Spreck, the new committee administrator. And Sydney Spreck, please just introduce yourself.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sydney Spreck. You may have worked with me previously. I was the committee legislative assistant for state government finance and for Chair Michael Nelson and Representative John Hewitt. And I now have early childhood and education policy as my committees.
Thank you, Ms. Breck. So members, you may see Ms. Breck in that role supporting Chair Richardson as well. And I've been delighted to have her on board. I think it's been just a little bit over a month and she's doing really well. So glad to have you. Then a new committee legislative assistant, Hans Doslin. Mr. Doslin, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Hans Doslin. This is my first session. I came previously from working in the unsheltered minor and young adult world, and really gain an appreciation for how vital it is to ensure that our state's youngest individuals and their families that support them have a safe, stable, and equitable environment which they can thrive in. I'm super excited for this session. Hopefully we can achieve some good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doslin. And then finally, the fiscal analyst that I mentioned, Solveig Bekele. Ms. Bekele, if you could please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, my name is Solveig Bekele. I'm sure I'm a familiar face to many of you. I spent the last 3 years working as the Jobs, Commerce, and Energy Fiscal Analyst. But when this opportunity opened up, I just thought it was too good to pass up. So very excited to be working in the education world with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bekele. And I have that publication from House Research on school finance financing. I'm not saying the name quite right, but in any case, that is a big and complicated area. And Chair Dabney is very familiar with that as well. And so I'm really glad to have your help in helping us think through all this. And I do want to make sure to acknowledge our returning staff, because I've been incredibly reliant on them, and I suspect other members of the committee have as well. Mars Beltrandi Rudquist, the DFL researcher, Jody Withers, GOP researcher, and Annie Mock, our House researcher, and Doug Berg, who is Ms. Bekele's equivalent on the HHS side. All four of them have given great service to the people of Minnesota. I had the least chance to work with Mr. Withers, of course, because he's supporting the GOP team. But all my experiences with him and with the other members have convinced me, the other staff members have convinced me that we are very, very well served by all four of them. And so glad to have everybody on board. So we need to do a little bit of past business. I'm going to ask Representative Pryor if she would move approval of the minutes of our last meeting from June 26th, 2021.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And reminder members of the public that these meeting minutes are on the website. Any additions or corrections, anyone, to those minutes? Not hearing anything. All in favor of approval of the June 26th minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And any opposed? Okay. Mr. Dozlin, you have your first motion passing. The minutes are approved. So members, a little bit of overview of the next couple of weeks. So this week, we're going to be looking backwards to a certain extent at the budget that passed last session. There was certainly compared to previous sessions, a fair amount of funding that went to the area of early care and learning. Certainly far less than what we had heard in testimony from last spring in terms of the need. We want to make sure that we understand how those funds are being used. And so we're going to be hearing from several agencies about that, and also about some spending that was not in the jurisdiction of our committee, but certainly relates to our interest in early child development. So we'll be hearing about that the next couple of sessions today and Thursday. Then next week, we pivot to, instead of looking backwards, to getting a snapshot of where we are now. We will have a joint hearing next Tuesday, the 8th, and we'll hear more about that at the end of this hearing with the Jobs and Workforce Development Committee. On Thursday, I'm expecting us to hear about policies and the roadmap that our state has recommended to follow from in terms of getting young children off to a great start. We had heard from Dr. Cynthia Osborne from the Prenatal the 3 Policy Impact Center a year ago, and so the plan is to hear an update on that. And then after that, of course, we're going to be looking forward, which is what we need to do as a committee, to say what do we need to do to get all children off to a great start, and what are the bills and provisions and budget items that we should be considering as we drive towards concluding the session. So that's the overall structure of things. Again, I'm expecting at the end of this hearing, we'll do a little check-in on the joint hearing for next week and continue on from there. So with that, though, as I said, we're going to be kind of looking backwards first. And so the first item is we're going to be hearing from our House researchers about what was passed last session, just to remind ourselves and kind of get oriented. And then we'll be hearing from representatives from Children and Family Services at the DHS, Department of Human Services, on how some of those funds have been spent. So I'm just going to pause and see if members have any questions about kind of where we're at with things. As you know, there'll be plenty of time for that too. And I'm not seeing any hands up right now. So I'm going to ask Ms. Mock then, who's our House researcher, to go first and just to walk us through some of the pieces that we approved. And then we'll move on to Mr. Berg and Ms. Bechel. Ms. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm Annie Mock with House Research, and I'm going to briefly describe some of the early childhood provisions that were enacted last session. And then I'll hand it over to Mr. Berg and Ms. Bechel, who will go through the fiscal tracking. So members, you'll recall that this committee passed an omnibus bill last spring. And after that omnibus left this committee, provisions of the bill were incorporated and enacted as parts of the K-12 and HHS omnibus bills. So among the provisions that were enacted as part of the K-12 omnibus were the extension of the 4,000 voluntary pre-kindergarten seats that would have otherwise expired. Those 4,000 seats were extended for fiscal years 2022 and 23. Also enacted was a prohibition on individual use screen time for children in publicly funded preschool or kindergarten programs. And that prohibition is scheduled to go into effect this coming July. One of the provisions in the HHS omnibus was a new home visiting program for pregnant women and families with young children. Under the program, MDH must award grants to start up or expand voluntary home visiting programs. At least 75% of the grant money must go to evidence-based home visiting programs, and up to 25% of the grant money may go to evidence-informed or promising practice home visiting programs. No new money was appropriated for this program, but existing home visiting appropriations were redirected to be awarded according to the criteria of this new program. Another home visiting program, the Nurse Family Partnership, which has been in session law and funded by legislatures for several years, was actually codified last session, and the legislature appropriated money to that home visiting program. The legislature also enacted several provisions that were the result of the work of the Family Child Care Task Force. So this was a task force established by the 2019 legislature to make recommendations related to family child care licensing. And among the many provisions that were enacted last session were the establishment of an ombudsperson for family child care providers, There are several modifications to licensing and training requirements. There was some direction to DHS to develop tools to assist family child care providers. And there's also the establishment of a family child care training advisory committee to advise DHS on training requirements for licensed family child care providers. Last session, the legislature also made several changes to the Child Care Assistance Program. So the Child Care Assistance Program, or CCAP, is the state federal program that helps lower income families pay for child care. So the rates for providers under that program were increased last session from the 25th percentile of the 2018 market rate survey up to the 40th percentile for infants and toddlers of the 2021 rate survey and the 30th percentile for preschoolers and school-age children. Additionally, the rate that's paid to legal non-licensed family child care providers under that program was increased. And that increase was from 68% of the rate for family child care providers up to 90% of that rate. And all those new rates were effective last November. Additionally, the legislature temporarily modified the priorities for the waiting list for the basic sliding fee program, which that program is a subset of the child care assistance program. The temporary changes to the waiting list allow more families to receive child care assistance, and those modifications are in effect through May of 2024. The legislature also allocated money to the basic sliding fee program to buy down the program's waiting list. And then the legislature enacted a few other changes to the child care assistance program, including limiting retroactive payments to child care providers and modifying how overpayments are handled in the program. And then the legislature also established and funded several child care related grant programs. These include money for retained grants, which are intended to incentivize individuals who are working in the child care field to actually remain in the field. And there's also money allocated for TEACH grants, which are designed to help early childhood educators increase their levels of education. The legislature also allocated money for business training for child care providers and allocated money to help child care providers pay for facility improvements and minor renovations and related needs like equipment. The legislature established and funded workforce development grants to provide lower income individuals training and job assistance so that they could begin a career in child care. Money was allocated for grants to assist family, friend, and neighbor caregivers, and also to establish a competitive grant program to expand access to child care for children with disabilities. And then the legislature also established and allocated money for stabilization grants to child care providers. And these are monthly grants that are available to eligible child care providers to help them remain open throughout and after the pandemic. Other provisions that were enacted last session include two evaluations of Parent Aware, which is the state's quality rating system for child care providers. One of the evaluations must examine Parent Aware's impact on outcomes, like children's progress towards school readiness. And those evaluation findings must be reported to the legislature by the end of 2024. The second evaluation requires DHS to conduct outreach to providers to identify barriers to pursuing a Parent Aware rating. And DHS must report its findings by March 1st of this year. Additionally, DHS is required to issue a report on foster children's participation in early care and education programs. That report is due December of this year. The legislature established the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force, and that task force is required to develop strategies to ensure that all families in the state have access to affordable and high quality care for their children. The task force is required to submit preliminary findings this December, and then a final report in February of 2023. The legislature directed the Children's Cabinet to develop recommendations relating to the governance of the state's early care and learning programs. And those recommendations are due today, I believe, February 1st, 2022. And then also the legislature was directed DHS and the Children's Cabinet to engage with a number of different entities like counties and other state agencies to develop recommendations for implementing a family-focused voluntary information sharing program, which is intended to improve the effectiveness of public assistance programs for families. And those recommendations are due to the legislature by January of next year. And then finally, the legislature allocated money to DHS to cover the fees related to administering child care background studies, and also allocated money to DHS to cover the administrative and IT costs associated with all these new programs and efforts. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Berg.
Thank you, Ms. Mock. If folks have clarifying questions along the way, raise your hand, but otherwise we'll keep making our way through. So Mr. Berg, we'll call on you. We are unmuted, you're muted. Working on it.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I am Sydney. I'm going to try to share my screen here. Yes. And Mr. Chair, I almost hope people can see this a bit.
Yeah, I can, Mr. Berg.
Okay. I'm planning to just look at this at a very high level on sort of the totals by fund and see if there are questions, although I will note two things. The first section of this is human services related changes. And you'll note at the top, there are four general fund items. There was not a lot of general fund activity out of this committee because we had so much federal funding in the human services side. The very first line I'll note, because members may not remember, Ms. Mock mentioned it, there was $450,000 a year added to the nurse home visiting program. That happened late as part of the conference committee negotiations. And so members of this committee will maybe not remember that that was dealt with. The other portion that Ms. Mock talked about codifying the base was, but this happened later.
Mr. Berg, I'm just going to pause you for 1 second on that too. I also want to make sure members recall that account is not in our committee's jurisdiction. It's in the jurisdiction of the health committee. We have an interest in it because it relates to early childhood development. And so it's something that we're keeping an eye on, but I want to make sure to clarify that as opposed to the other. I think all of these other lines are within, maybe, I guess not the IT and system improvements, maybe at the bottom as well, but certainly the home visiting is not an account that we have jurisdiction over.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And that's one thing where you'll see that MDH is that first line and everything else is DHS, which is a clue on there. But I will, it's a little murkier on in the committee versus not. The general fund items are where this is kind of an issue. You see, we have a small amount for childcare, the systems cost for the childcare rate changes we did. And there was a governor's initiative that changed the way the department deals with CCAP retroactive payments that save money. That actually started in Representative Liebling's committee, but nonetheless, it has an impact on the CCAP program, so I'm showing it here. And the bottom one in the general fund there, I'll note, and maybe the chair is not even thinking of this one. There was a new program we started up for 3 years that provides childcare grants for providers serving children with disabilities. This was part of the HCBS enhanced FMAP money that we dealt with a lot, and that whole garbled sentence will not make a lot of sense to probably most of the members, but the federal government as part of the ARPA package enhance the federal matching rate we got on certain medical assistance services, which gave us a substantial amount of money to spend. That money was put in the general fund, and this is one of the eligible things that was done with it, was to create, I don't know if you would call it a pilot program. It exists in statute, or it's funded for 3 years, because that's how long this funding lasts, to start up a new program or new payment availability to childcare providers who serve children with disabilities. So that one's not, it didn't come out of this committee, but it is, you know, I think obviously of interest to this committee. And so the total general fund is low. There was these net out to $3.4 million in spending in 22-23. And a savings of $307,000 to the general fund in the tails in 24 and 25. The main action for the childcare portion was in the next two sections, which are, we had really two pots of federal childcare money that we were dealing with. The first one here, the next one on the schedule is the CCDBG, that stands for Childcare Development Block Grant. Also, as part of the pandemic additional funding, the federal government gave us a substantial increase in the availability of our CCDBG block grant money. There is money we get every year for that from the federal government. And then we got a substantial additional portion, again, with a three-year spending horizon on it. That paid for most of the, just sort of roughly grouping the rate changes that Ms. Mock talked about, and you can see the various retain and teach grants and a whole slew of the things that Ms. Mock talked about were funded through CCDBG funds, $180.8 million in 22-23 and $139.5 million in the tails. I'll finish what I'm talking about, and then I'll make one further comment about a complication in all of this that is a good one. But going down to the last section of the human services changes, these are referred to as stabilization funds. Again, as part of the pandemic legislation Congress passed, the state got $324.2 million of stabilization, federal stabilization funds. The bulk of these, you'll see the third row of that is called Child Care Public Health Grants. It was required by the federal law that I believe it's 90% of that money go out in payments to providers that they can apply for. I mean, we could, it really just support payments for businesses, and it had to cover 90% of those funds. And then you'll see some other things that we were able to do with the additional funding out of that. Again, that's $324.2 million, all of which was allocated in fiscal 22, but which has to be spent over the next 3 years. And just one technical thing I'll mention about how things happened in the November forecast that may I hesitate to because it might raise more questions than we can answer. The child care projections that were at the end of the session, by the time we got to November, MMB and DHS realized that the child care demand had not come back in fiscal 22 anywhere near the amount that they had anticipated it would. And so they reduced the amount of MFIP child care that is paid for by the general fund to zero and paid for 100% of that demand in fiscal 22 with CCDBG funds, or yes. And then they upped the amount of, that reduced the amount of TANF funds as well. We spent, I'm jumping ahead a step. Then they, to maintain our maintenance of effort for TANF, the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families Block Grant, they increased the amount of cash grant for MFIP cash, and that had the effect of reducing the amount of TANF cash that was spent on MFIP, but it maintained our MOE, so we got our whole TANF block grant. The net result of this is that the two changes I mentioned on the general fund of not spending general fund on the MFIP childcare, but increasing general fund spending on MFIP cash, net out to a savings to the general fund of 10 some million, a little over 10 million. And then because of the changes I mentioned in the TANF fund, the balance in the TANF fund went up by, I haven't got the number right at the top of my head, but I think it's in the neighborhood of 40 some million. I might be off on that. I'll check on that and get back to you. So that is a complicated thing that happened in the forecast. Probably if I hadn't mentioned that, you would never know that, but it was to the benefit of the state, both the general fund and the TANF fund. So, and with that, I will, unless there are questions, I'll turn the last section over to Ms. Beckel.
Why don't we, Mr. Berg, I'll note you. you referenced there being a complicated issue there at the end, and I some of the members may be thinking there's a number of complicated aspects as there's so, because we are in the maybe both fortunate and challenging position of being in the middle of both HHS and education finance, and both have a lot of complexities to them. Yeah, I'm thinking, why don't we, since it's a short section, Ms. Becca, we'll have you go, and then members, we can have some, see what questions there are. So, and I should probably just, Ms. Becca, just as you're starting, I'll note that that some of this, a number of these lines, in fact, I think are in the jurisdiction of Chair Dabney's Education Finance Committee as well, similar to what I referenced home visiting. And if you can just acknowledge that too. But Ms. Becca, please go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, so at the bottom of the spreadsheet here, you'll see the first line, VPK maintain current levels. So that was the extension of the VPK program for fiscal years 22 and 23 only. And all of the other items underneath that are relating to that. So this involved a formula increase. And so because it was a change to the formula, it meant that all these other items beneath would change as well. So you can see the increased numbers for fiscal years 22 and 23. And then if you're curious about the fiscal years 24 changes, that just represents that 90-10 split that the education formula uses. So it's 90% in 1 year, and then it's 10% in the following year. And you can see that the special education increase is a little off from that 90-10 split. That one just generally is a different percentage split. So overall, the change in funding for maintaining the current levels of voluntary pre-kindergarten was roughly $39.9 million in the first biennium, and then 2.0 in the second biennium.
Thank you, Ms. Beckel. And actually, as I look at this, I think every single one of these passed through, was included in Chair Dabney's budget in the end, as opposed to moving from ours, because it was the formula that that the VPK, voluntary pre-K spending, passes through. Is that correct? Just want to make sure folks are clear about kind of what would be included in our budget versus not.
That is correct. We just included this in this spreadsheet because it was related to early education. But yes, all of this is linked to the formula.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Members, are there questions for Mr. Berg or Ms. Beckel or Ms. Mock for that matter? Just looking to see if there's hands. And just as we're waiting for that, Mr. Berg, whoever's controlling this, I think you are, Mr. Berg, if you could scroll back up to the top. I did want to verify one thing. You mentioned the line near the top about, the fourth line down there about grants for providers serving children with disabilities. And I mentioned that maybe hadn't passed through our committee. I believe it was Representative Wozlewick's bill, and that it actually, was heard in our committee. And so just want to make sure that I was remembering that correctly, at least. Ms. Mock may be able to help us on that or otherwise.
Mr. Chair, I think that's right. Maybe Annie can confirm. I think you're right. My memory was failing me. It didn't hit my radar as a funding thing until conference, but you may be, I think, remembering correctly.
Yeah, no problem. I see Representative Pryor has her hand up. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, probably my question is something that might be answered later in this meeting or at a future meeting. But especially listening to how we've been able to move funds, as Mr. Berg was describing, for net savings, to acknowledge that, you know, it's taking a while for families to get back into the workforce, recover from the pandemic, and all of those kinds of things, that the demand for childcare had been less than we had budgeted for. And so I guess what I kind of like the bottom line is, you know, before we had wait lists for our different programs and for the basic sliding fee. And I guess at some point I'd like to find out where we stand on those wait lists, if we have eliminated them.
That may be a question for Ms. Mock, perhaps Representative Price, are you nodding? So Ms. Mock, if you can just provide any thoughts on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pryor, the last wait list I saw from DHS, the wait list for the basic sliding fee program was much, much smaller. I think it was down to a few hundred children on the wait list, but maybe DHS can confirm that.
This would probably be a good question, Representative Pryor, for DHS. So maybe we'll direct that to them if that makes sense to you. I see your hand is down, and so I'm just going to see if we have any others. I guess I'll just note this can be a little bit misleading what we're looking at, only because the funds going in through different committees, et cetera. As I recall from at the end of June of 2021, that in the area of childcare and early learning, we actually generated savings for state spending. You'll see the line there, CCAP retroactive payments actually has a savings of $637 million in the 1 year, et cetera. So this area actually saved money for the general fund and then was spending federal dollars on almost all of this. So in fact, in a way, our state went backwards in terms of our state investment from last spring. And certainly it's something that we're going to be looking at. So,
and Mr. Chair, just since you're on that point and I'm looking at it, I note that there is an error on the spreadsheet and it has copied on the 22-23 total, it has copied the line above it below, and it should have, you see there are savings in both years, and that should add to a net savings, not a cost. So
yeah, and I think I misspoke too. I said 637 million, that would be 637,000 on that line. So my apologies, big difference there. Mr. Berger, was there something else?
No, that's it. Just that since you mentioned it, I noted an error on the sheet, but.
Okay. Well, not seeing any more questions, really appreciate our House research team putting this together. It's been many months since we were doing this work and felt like an important thing to connect. So now I'm calling up the folks from Department of Human Services. I think we're starting with Ms. Posine. And so Ms. Posine, if you can just remind us who you are, and then please proceed with your presentation. Thanks.
Certainly. Good morning, everyone. I am Lori Posine, the manager of the Child Care Assistance Program within DHS. And
please proceed. Yes,
we have a slide deck. We're starting with the CCAP program, timely to some questions you just asked. So for those of you who need reminders or have not heard this before, the Child Care Assistance Program helps families pay for child care where parents go to work or school, and also helps promote child development, healthy child development, and helps children have access to care that helps them also prepare for school. We typically serve about 30,000 children throughout the state. As mentioned, that was down last year, but anticipating it getting back up to about that number, or possibly even more with new funds. And proportionately, 69% of our children of color are American Indian children served by CCAP. The program also helps address disparities and needs in throughout communities in Minnesota. And 62% of the children served by CCAP are 5 and younger. Next slide. So yeah, the outcome of the session, we temporarily reprioritizing the waiting list, which means that families who aren't getting served are getting services faster. In the past, there was a transition year group of families who had left MFIP who got continuously served. But what that meant was that they moved into the basic sliding fee program before families who weren't getting served. So that prioritization issue is solved through May of 24. So that's why it's called temporary. And we also, with the funds, were able to boost calendar year 24. In addition, CERSA funds through the federal availability of funds was added in 21, 22, and 23. So the net effect was boosting funds for a series of four calendar years, which should serve about 2,000 additional families and 4,000 children. And as mentioned, in November, there were 710 families in 9 counties on the waiting list, and compared to the year prior, which was at more than double that number. There is movement on the waiting list. We've talked to almost all counties and many counties, and including those with waiting lists, who are moving off families consistently. It's just that the churn on the waiting list sometimes keeps up with processing applications, seeing how many are actually eligible, and then moving on to the next group on the waiting list.
Ms. Postine, I was just going to ask if you wouldn't mind at this point, just I don't know if there's anything further you can say in response to Representative Pryor's question about, and you may have at this point adequately answered it. I just want to, so as long as you're bringing up waiting lists, it feels like a good chance to.
Yeah. So the question being, what's the reason that there are still families on the waiting list?
I think Representative Pryor has. Representative Pryor, why don't you just quickly clarify if you can, Representative Pryor.
All right, thank you. And I think Ms. Pusine, that's kind of what I'm asking right now. And I think you've started to answer that it's almost, we will never perhaps be able to completely eliminate the waiting list because it takes a while to process families. But that really, you know, maybe at some point to understand how long a family might be on the waiting list and that time has been reduced now, or eligible families.
Yes. So a couple. Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you. A couple things. Yes, the processing time. In addition, counties can be hesitant, rightfully so, to make commitments to large groups of new families while they're assessing their spending, and they tend to do that 3 years out. Because once a family gets on the basic sliding fee program, they have to be continually served. And if the county overspends their allocation, they are on the hook, unless there's sufficient statewide underspending to cover a county's overspending. So the calendar year allocations managed by counties and tribes are tricky. And, many counties would be conservative on their spending side until they actually see how many commitments they're truly making, which causes sort of a week by week, month by month assessment of those commitments.
Mm-hmm. Let me just see, Representative Pryor, anything further? Looks like you're Representative Pryor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm just kind of, some thoughts that I have when I hear that answer is that maybe one thing that we should be considering is, right now we've said that these are temporary, that this change that we've made for the waiting list, and it sounds like, you know, something that we might think about in the future is for counties, the idea of being assured of certain funds is really important to make sure that they're not making commitments they can't keep in the future. So I think, you know, that's probably something that the committee should be aware of, is that the stability of the funding that we're giving is really important to the counties, because they have to do budgets just like we do. So stability is important, just as it is in the K-12 funding also. And then the other point that I think is a takeaway from this discussion is that, you know, we talk about workforce and how we can get people back into the workforce, because we need workers in Minnesota. The stability of funding for childcare is going to be very important. So, I appreciate this discussion that we're having, Ms. Pusine, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for this kind of pause and as we review our work.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. So, Ms. Pusine, please continue.
Thank you. Next slide. Yes, so rates, the childcare assistance program reimbursement rates cover part of the market. They don't cover the complete market, which is why we talk about percentiles. Percentiles that are covered are, if you stacked the lowest to the highest rates in Minnesota for infants and toddlers, we cover up to the 40th percentile. So another way to think about that is under half of the market is fully covered by the CCAP infant and toddler rates. And then the 30th percentile is achieved for preschool and school age groups. So that was funded last year, effective November 15th. And the benefit, if you will, is that for centers, weekly rates did go up about 16%, and for family child care, about 12.5%. And that is added to that last year with, thanks to the legislature, with the also a boost in legal non-licensed provider rates. They had gone up and down in the past and had been previously at 68% of the family child care rate, and they were boosted to 90% of the family child care rate. And the other provision in what passed was tied to the next market rate survey, which would boost the rates to the same market access levels, 30th and 40th percentiles in 2025. One consistent item we've talked about over the past few years, especially, was that the Federal Office of Child Care recommends states providing access at the 75th percentile, covering about 3/4 of the market that way. And in 2003, Minnesota had done that. And since then, there were a combination of decreases and the recent increases. Next slide. I thought I'd show some examples of rate changes. We in Minnesota use a methodology clustering like priced counties together. So we have four clusters throughout Minnesota. They kind of tend to follow size of counties, not necessarily, but tend to. And so here's some examples of weekly center toddler rates. The rate before the update shown by some example counties. And then you can see at the 40th percentile what the increase was. For instance, in Wilkin County, it went up by $15 a week. And then the differentials, which we like to mention because there are certain credentials and the 3- and 4-star parent aware ratings that qualify a provider to have a higher maximum rate. And I'll say maximum rates are the highest that CCAP can reimburse, but we do reimburse up to only what the provider charges. So these rates you see here are maximum rates, not necessarily what we pay. But you can see that the 15 and 20% differentials make a difference in access to the market for families who are choosing care in their area of choice. So you can see that across all four of these counties examples, the access to the market goes up when the 15 and 20% differential is applied.
Ms. Fosin, we've got a question from Representative Wasilek. Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if Ms. Fosin can answer this question, but I know there's been a lot of discussion about sort of nationwide, like what states are meeting that 75th percentile and what states are not. And I'm wondering if you maybe can give us some information about like what impacts those. So one of the things that I've heard is that Minnesota has more expensive childcare than other states. So would that impact our ability to cover, if we have more expensive, if we have higher rates in Minnesota, would that impact our ability to reach that 75 percentile threshold, or what sort of factors go into that? I'm just curious because I've heard different things from different states, and I'm wondering if you could maybe give us some of that information.
Ms. Posin, can you, and I should note, I believe that there will be a proposal. I know the administration has proposed to increase rates to the 75th percentile. We had heard a proposal, a bill on that last year as well. So I think we'll have a chance to discuss this at a future hearing. But if you can provide a little bit of information to Representative Wasilek, that'd be great.
Yes, thank you for the question. Representative Wasilewicz and others, we will have to get back to you really, because last year we did some research on where Minnesota was at relative to other states. We were in the lower, certainly quadrant, if not lower, for access to the market before our rates went up in November. And really we'll have to get back to you about like how that now compares based on what we can find out. And also it seems like there's a layer to that, which is kind of compared to the private pay market, which every state does have to measure their percentile, which does compare to the private pay market. But in short, yes, the cost, the full cost, if you will, of covering most or all of the rates in Minnesota would go up if in general childcare costs are higher.
Good, thank you. It looks like Representative Wasilewicz has done it again. That we'll have a chance to talk more about this, I know, at future sessions. So Ms. Pocene, please continue.
So the last slide we showed was center rates. We wanted to show that also family childcare rates were improved, and we're showing the same counties for toddler weekly rates, but with family childcare, and again showing that not only did the access to the market go up by covering more of the rates that are charged by providers, but with the 15 or 20% differential, it again increases access to the market with those higher rates. And then this was touched on a little bit. We are working on the Family Support and Improvement Program recommendations that the legislature asked us to create. It kind of is building on the theme of how could information sharing at the local level improve effectiveness of public assistance programs. It's been a topic of discussion with the preschool development grant. So we are working across agencies and within departments to gather some existing information and build on that to create recommendations that we would bring back next year.
I'll just note for committee members that I don't think that this is something that did pass through our committee, because it was looking at public assistance programs more broadly, of which childcare assistance is only one. But I will be interested, as members will as well, when this comes out, but it'll be next session. So we probably won't need to address it so much this one. Anyway, thank you so much, Ms. Pocene. And please continue. It looks like maybe you're handing things off to Ms. Swenson-Class. Not sure. Let's see.
Yes.
Okay, so good. Ms. Swenson-Class, please introduce yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to you and members of the committee. I'm Deb Swenson-Class. I'm manager of Child Development Services, a unit within the Child Care Services Division alongside the Child Care Assistance Program. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about our progress implementing American Rescue Plan Act funded efforts passed by the legislature last session. In addition to the CCAP provisions that Lori just described, Child Care Services Division is leading on implementation on a wide range of other provisions, and key among them are those developed in response, as you had noted, Mr. Chair, to the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations. Today's overview will focus on provisions in these three areas: supports for family child care providers as businesses, supports for and reforms related to training and education, and then Parent Aware, Minnesota's quality rating and improvement system. So I'll provide a brief description and an update on the current status of each provision, and I know that the committee will be hearing from colleagues in DHS licensing on Thursday on the Family Child Care Task Force provisions being implemented by the licensing division.
And Ms. what I'll just note, I want to make sure not to forget this, just to thank Representative Wasilewicz, who's the chair of that task force, and Representative Damath, who served in the task force as well, and really appreciated the work of both of them in advancing these. So I want to make sure not to forget that. So please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, and I'll wrap up this morning with an update on the Child Care Stabilization Grant Program, also funded with our funds. So next slide, please. The first new support for family child care providers as businesses, as well as other types of programs, child care programs, are the Child Care Facility Revitalization Grants. And as was described in the walkthrough earlier, $22.5 million was appropriated for grants to child care providers for facility improvements, minor renovations, and related equipment and services, including those types of renovations that would help a program meet licensing requirements. And our update on this new support is that the program is being administered through a grant contract with First Children's Finance. First Children's Finance is has work underway to finalize a program manual. Applications for this new grant program for child care providers will be available starting in mid to late March of this year. Next slide, please. A second new support for family child care providers as businesses, again, as well as other types of programs, is a child care one-stop regional assistance network. And $3 million was appropriated to develop and implement a plan to create this assistance network to support child care providers and individuals interested in becoming providers with establishing and sustaining a licensed family child care or group family child care program or a child care center. Among the progress that we've made on this front, a work group was convened and completed its planning work in December of 21. Per session law, we submitted an implementation plan to the legislature on December 31st, 2021. And that plan describes how the assistance network will be made available statewide through our child care resource and referral system, which comprise is otherwise known as our child care aware system. And on the heels of the completion of that plan, funding for this initiative is being added to the grant contracts for our child care aware grantees. That funding will run through June of 2024. And immediately out of the starting gate, the child care aware system is poised to begin hiring and training staff with the support of that funding. A new website will be launched, resources will be developed, and a marketing and outreach campaign will occur by April of this year. Next slide. A third support for family child care providers as businesses are grants to launch pilots for shared services innovation. So $200,000 was appropriated and direction was provided to DHS to establish a grant program to test strategies by which family child care providers may share services and in doing so achieve economies of scale. Our progress on this front is that an RFP for these grants was designed and is posted. The deadline for responders is actually this Friday. And our goal is to pilot two to four grants to test different approaches for family child care shared services. The contracts will be in place by early April 22 and will conclude in September of 23. This next activity also supports family child care providers and other types of child care programs as businesses, and it's also the first of a number of initiatives related to training and workforce supports that I'll move through next. So $3 million was appropriated to expand the availability of business training and consultation for individuals working in family child care programs and in centers to build and strengthen and acquire business skills. The funding for this activity has already been added to an existing contract. It is a DHS grantee, First Children's Finance, And the service is now available, and the funding for this effort will run through June of 23. Moving on to some other supports for and reforms related to training and education and for family child care providers and child care centers. This item or initiative, workforce development grants, is supported with $3 million appropriated to provide economically challenged individuals the job skills training, career counseling, and job placement assistance needed for a career path in childcare. Just noting that while this initiative didn't directly emerge out of the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations, we are including it here today to share an update with you. It is, as is the case with the one-stop assistance network that I described a few minutes ago, our planning for this is complete for these new services, and per law, the services will be made available statewide through our Child Care Resource and Referral System, or Child Care Aware system, and funding for this new program, along with the one-stop assistance network funding, is being added to grant contracts for Child Care Aware agencies as we speak. The new program is in process of being rolled out statewide, and it will be fully implemented by July 1. The legislature appropriated additional funding for a longstanding child care workforce support called the TEACH Scholarships. TEACH Scholarships provide funding to cover 85% of the cost of tuition and books for early childhood professionals pursuing a degree in child development or early childhood education. An additional $2 million over 3 years was provided for this program. And for fiscal year 22, the funding, this funding means that there'll be an increase for this fiscal year from $1 million to $1.4 million over the previous year. Small updates were also made to the authorizing language for the TEACH program, and this funding and the direction to meet the changes in authorizing language have been incorporated into the grant contract for Child Care Aware of Minnesota. This service is currently available. Scholarship amounts remain the same as in previous years, in previous recent years, averaging about $4,600 per scholarship recipient, but more students are being served as the year moves forward. Next slide, please. Similarly, the legislature appropriated additional funding for another longstanding child care workforce support called the Retain Program. The Retaining Early Educators Through Attaining Incentives Now Retention Grant Program was established in state statute last session to provide competitive grants to incentivize well-trained child care professionals to remain in the workforce. So retained bonuses can be used for uses like program supplies, professional development, or personal expenses that the recipients may have. $1 million was appropriated beginning in this fiscal year and up from just a modest amount of funding, $437,000 in fiscal year 21. And this will expand the availability of these grants over the next 3 years. Grants range from $500 to $3,500 per recipient based on their educational attainment. And the additional ARPA funding for this activity was added to the contract for Child Care Aware of Minnesota, who administers the program. The service is currently available. 30% of qualified early educators who applied for Retain in fiscal year 21 were turned down due to lack of funding. And in the first round of funding in fiscal year 22, with this additional support, every eligible applicant receives support. On to the next slide. Here, turning to some of the reforms recommended by the Family Child Care Task Force, including the proposed creation of a more formalized approach to ensuring family child care provider input into training. Beginning in 2022, a newly created Family Child Care Training Advisory Committee will convene to advise DHS on training requirements for licensed family and group family child care providers. $59,000 was appropriated to form and support this committee, which will meet from between now and December of 2025. And on the progress front, a contract for a facilitator has been established. The advisory committee members have been appointed, and a first meeting will be held this month, in the month of February. Another reform recommended by the Family Child Care Task Force relates to expanding active supervision training options for providers. And what this means is that license holders and second adult caregivers will now have the ability to choose to complete either a 2-hour active supervision course developed by DHS or complete any courses in the ensuring safety competency area under the health, safety, and nutrition standard of our knowledge and competency framework that we've identified as an active supervision training course. So in other words, the number of courses now available has greatly expanded to meet this training requirement. 40 additional courses have been approved to meet the training requirement and have been identified for providers in our develop data system that providers use to search training options. A communication about these additional courses was sent to all licensed providers by DHS licensing. So this provision is underway and available to providers. And then finally, a final recommendation from the Family Child Care Task Force proposed funding for a validation study of Parent Aware before future updates to the Parent Aware standards and indicators are considered. And this evaluation also, evaluation effort also includes an equity report. So $1.435 million was appropriated for these evaluation activities. Again, the validation study and a report to explore child care provider barriers to Parent Aware participation. For the evaluation, the larger validation study, a request for proposal was written and released, and a process was conducted in fall of 2021. DHS is on track to finalize a contract with the selected vendor this month. The evaluation activities will then be carried out for several years with a final report delivered to the legislature in June of 2024. And then for the Parent Aware Equity Report, we also proceeded to with a contract with a consultant to carry out the engagement and outreach necessary to collect information from providers across Minnesota about barriers to participating in Parent Aware. That intensive outreach and engagement occurred November through the beginning of January. And we are on track to deliver a report to you with findings and a plan on March 1st. So finally, I'll move through a couple of slides on the Child Care Stabilization Grant Program. The 2021 legislature created this program in law to stabilize Minnesota's child care industry during and after the COVID pandemic. There's federal law as a part of the Federal Child Care Development Block grant through ARPA that dictates many provisions of the program. And state statute provides further direction on the purpose and uses of the program. The legislature allocated a total of $304 million in ARPA funds for the program, of which, as was noted earlier, just shy of $300 million is available for direct grants to providers. And in addition, in December of 2021, the governor's office and DHS prioritized an additional $20 million from the COVID-19 flexible response account for Minnesota's childcare providers in response to rising new COVID case totals in Minnesota. So I'll say a few words about that additional support for providers. So there are actually four types of grants or grant opportunities within the Child Care Stabilization Program. And this slide provides a snapshot of the current status, the duration, and the start date of each. The first three grant types were established in the law passed in the 21 session, and they include transition grants, which were designed to stabilize the childcare industry while DHS transitioned from the previous federally funded public health support funds program and worked to finalize the implementation of the base grants. The grant awards for the transition grants were available to any eligible and interested provider, and they were made in the months of July and August 2021. And these grants have now concluded. The base grants, which many of you might be more familiar with, were developed to stabilize the childcare market, consistent with direction provided by the legislature and aligned with the federal requirements. These grants rolled out beginning in September of 21, and these are the grants that have been available on a monthly basis and will run through June of 2023. And then the third type of grant opportunity funded with the ARPA Child Care Development Funds for stabilization are the financial hardship grants. The financial hardship grants were developed or are developed to support providers experiencing extreme financial hardship, again, consistent with the direction in state and federal law. And the first application for these grants opened just last week on January 26th and closes February 9th. The grant funds are available until they are expended, and we are already planning for at least one additional opportunity for programs to apply in February. And then finally, the opportunity to apply for an additional one-time supplemental grant was made available in January of 2022 to help providers with increased costs resulting from the surge in COVID-19 cases brought on by the Omicron variant. Childcare providers had the opportunity to apply for these grants in the same online application made available for the childcare stabilization base grants. So this application was open January 18th through 25th, and providers could apply for a base grant, the one-time supplemental grant, or both. And this one-time supplemental grant opportunity is now completed. Moving on to the final slide. This slide provides information on the funds allocated, the funding source, and the grant award amounts for each type of grant for the four grants I've just described. For the transition grants, these were the grants that were provided in July and August. $17.3 million was allocated from the almost $300 million appropriated from federal funds. The grant award amounts were $600 per month for family child care providers, $4,250 for licensed centers with a capacity smaller than 75 children, $5,500 for child care centers with a capacity of 75 children or more, and $1,500 for certified centers. For base grants, these are the grants that began last September and continue monthly through June of 23. $211.6 million was allocated from the almost $300 million for the broader child care stabilization program. These grants are tied in several ways per state statute to the workforce working in our childcare settings. So one of those ways is as required in statute that base grant award amounts are determined based on the number of full-time equivalent staff who regularly care for children in the program. And this includes sole proprietors, like family child care providers, as well as employees of a program. And the programs receive $430 per month per FTE. Another way in which this program is tied to and supports the workforce is that providers are required to use at least 70% of their monthly grant award to increase compensation or benefits for staff regularly caring for children. And in addition, the providers who have received recent payments through CCAP, early learning scholarships, or both, are eligible for a 10% increase in their base grant award for funding period.
I'm going to ask Ms. Bosin, as you're proceeding, I hear a lot of feedback there. If members have questions, please start raising your hand, because I think Ms. Swenson-Klatt, this is your final slide, is that correct?
That's correct, good. Mr. Chair.
Okay, and so members, if you have questions, I can see Representative Wasilek does. What I might do, Ms. Swenson-Klatt, is if there's anything further about these final couple columns, if you can cover that fairly quickly, and then we'll, but certainly if folks have questions about any of this, they can dive in. But I'll have you finish up and then we'll go to Representative Wasilek. And if other members have questions, I see Representative Damuth will as well. So yeah, but Ms. Swenson-Klatt, please finish this up and then we'll go to those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So for financial hardship grants, the grants that are just beginning to support providers, who are experiencing extreme financial hardship, approximately $70 million is set aside for this purpose. And due to the differences in how licensed family child care, licensed centers, and certified center providers operate, there are different eligibility criteria for each provider type, and the estimated grant award amounts vary too by provider type. Given that financial hardship grant award amounts are intended to stabilize programs facing extreme hardship, the grant amounts have been determined based on the average operating expenses of providers over a period of 3 months. And you can see the estimated grant award amounts on the slide. There are some tiers of grant award amounts for family childcare providers and centers. For family child care providers, ranging from $1,500 to $4,500, and then for centers ranging from $8,000 to $70,000, depending on the child care capacity and operating hours of a program. And certified centers can apply for grant amounts of approximately $14,500. And then finally, for the one-time supplemental stabilization grants, offered in January only, that were funded with $20 million from the ARPA Flexible Response Account. These grants, again, have concluded and are being awarded this week. The grant amounts that providers will receive range from the $14,059 for family child care to $6,688 for centers, and a little over $10,000 for larger centers, and a little over $3,600 for certified. So I'll conclude there, and happy to answer questions. I'll just note, Mr. Chair, there's a handout describing these programs that we provided to the committee.
Thank you so much. Well, let's leave these slides up because I suspect some of the questions, I'm not sure where that feedback's coming from. Let's leave this up because I expect some of the questions have to do with this. Representative Wasilek, you had your hand up first, but since you'd spoken earlier, I'm inclined to have all of Representatives Damuth and Franson go, and then we'll work you in. So Representative Damuth, we'll have you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Swenson-Klatt, for the report. I know we've done a lot of work on the Family Child Care Task Force, and it's nice to see the details as they've come out. I've been looking for that. My question is basically two-part. Going back to the child care facility revitalization grants, and that was on your slide 10. You had talked about $22.5 million that the legislature appropriated back in June, but that those applications aren't going to even be starting until late March. First, as a comment, that's very concerning to me. We know with the shortage that we have in childcare across the state, to know that we've been sitting on these dollars before applications even start is very concerning. But if you could please let me know when those applications start, what is the time frame, and then when can providers start expecting dollars to flow to them?
Ms. Swenson-Clapp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Damuth. The first grant round that First Children's Finance will begin in mid to late March will allow for providers to apply for these grants for facility improvements, minor renovations, and other services and supports. I believe that the grant, the frequency of grant rounds will be monthly. So beginning in March, from then on, providers should have a monthly opportunity to apply for grant awards. If I'm wrong about that, we will loop back to you, Representative Damuth, and correct that frequency of grant award amounts. But then they will be available for Minnesota providers all the way through June of 24.
Ms. Francis, can you comment on the first half of Representative Damuth's question about just the sheer amount of time, given, you know, the budget passed late June and then the timing of the applications in mid to late March?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I think Representative Damuth and Mr. Chair, we faced a number of challenges in DHS, frankly, in moving through contract work with the significant influx of federal stimulus funds. So there's just been a lot of work happening and effort to move contracting through as quickly as possible. We also would have appreciated or liked to see this contract in place earlier than it was.
I suppose the sheer number of different programs that we sent in your direction. But Representative Damuth, any follow-up that you have at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the comments and the question, or the answers to the question. I'm still not understanding exactly when providers, once their applications are submitted, I'm not understanding when they'll actually see dollars. I understand the monthly ability to apply, but how long is that processing time of those applications?
Ms. Swenson-Clapp.
I think unless I see a response pop up from one of my colleagues, I will have to provide that answer to you after the hearing today.
And I know other members would be interested too, so please do provide that. Representative Damuth, anything further right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the follow-up just to that on the Childcare One-Stop Regional Assistance Network report that was due to the legislature and submitted the end of December. I have not seen that report. So if that could be sent out to the committee, I think it would be beneficial for us to be able to look at the report. And that was on slide 11.
And you know, Representative Damuth, I had the same question and our staff reminded me as I was sending some notes to them, messages to them that we had, Ms. Freck forwarded it around on January 4th, I believe, but we will have, I'll have her do that again. This is to members of the committee. I had forgotten that we'd received that myself. So we will make sure to, at least I think I'm talking about the correct report. Somebody can correct me, please. But in any case, we'll make sure to send it back around again. So thank you. Thank you. So then Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so my question is, as we look across the nation and in our own state and in our communities, the message is that we are still in a child care crisis. So my question is, those child stabilization grants, have they worked? Have we increased the numbers of child care providers? Have we stabilized the industry? Because what I'm seeing and hearing is that we haven't, and we've pumped millions and hundreds of millions into childcare, are we seeing a benefit with the money that taxpayers have invested in?
Terrific question. Thank you, Representative Franson. So Ms. Swenson-Clatt, I guess you're the one to answer that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson. The child care stabilization grants, very much agree, have been a major influx of funding for Minnesota's child care providers that has just really started to roll out, of course, beginning last July, August, and then September with the base grants. This grant program follows on the heels of several other financial support programs that are noted in the handout I mentioned. We've provided to you the Public Health Support Funds program and early in the pandemic, the peacetime emergency child care grants. And we believe Minnesota, the child care industry in Minnesota has indeed been stabilized by these programs that we've seen relative to other states, some other states, a stabilizing effect for the industry. That doesn't mean that we haven't lost providers, but we've believe we've seen lessened the loss compared again to other states during this difficult pandemic that's stressed providers so much. Stabilization grants aren't intended to help launch new providers, but rather to stabilize those providers who are currently operating and open and serving children.
Representative Franson.
Thank you. And to piggyback off that, are you tracking those that have applied for the grants, and if any of those grant providers have left the childcare field, and if so, could we have those numbers? Also, can we have the numbers of how many childcare providers we had at the start of COVID-19 to recent days? How many we have, how many have left, and how many new providers have entered the field?
So that second part, let's definitely make sure that we get that information. Ms. Swenson-Clatt, if you can provide anything now, that's great, but we certainly would want to get information from DHS sent to us to share with the committee. But then as far as the rest of Representative Francis' question, Ms. Swenson-Clatt, please.
We'd be happy to provide the information on the changing supply of childcare since the pandemic. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson, what's the other part of the question that I could try to answer right now?
I think the first part, well, Representative Franson, please, yeah.
Well, my question was just the beginning of the COVID-19 to recent days of those that have applied for any assistance related to COVID, whether it be the stabilization grants or the grants early on in the peacetime emergency, how many providers that have accepted those funds, and of those that have accepted the funds, how many do we still have in the field or have left the field?
Ms. Swenson-Clatt.
Thank you, Representative Franson and Mr. Chair. We can provide more detailed data, but I can share a partial response to your question right now. Averaged across the 6 months of the, from July to December of the provision of the transition grants and the base grants, 61% of eligible family childcare providers received those grants at least once during that time period. 69% of childcare centers received those grants. 60% of certified childcare centers received those grants, and 34% of legal non-licensed providers applied for and received those grants.
Before I turn back to Representative Franson, I'll just note, it does seem like, and Representative Franson, thank you so much for bringing up these questions, because it does seem like, whatever detailed information we can get looking backwards as to the impact of this really series of grants, because the stabilization grants, as you say, started in June of 2021, but that was a full, we'd had grants going for the prior year series, starting with, I think we were the first state in the country to authorize state funding to help stabilize the industry in late March of 2020, and getting a sense of what the impact has been of those rounds of grants. And to Representative Franson's point, can we actually point to that and say, yes, that I guess I had thought anecdotally, at least, that the money we put in early on meant that our state had lost many fewer providers than in other states. But it occurs to me, I don't think I've ever actually seen, specific concrete numbers on that. And having that sense would be really helpful. So I'll turn back to Representative Franson, please continue, but I just want to make that note.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that information will be very helpful as we go forward in our committee this year. Then, back to the percentages, the percentages are not really helpful without a actual number to go along with it. Like, how many providers are we talking when you're saying 69%, how many centers, how many providers when you're saying 35%. So if we could have those hard concrete numbers to go along with the percentage, that'll paint a more clear picture for us on the committee.
At some point, Ms. Swenson-Clatt, I can see you nodding. Further comments on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Franson, we do have those numbers readily available in the form of a document, and we'll be happy to send those over to you.
Yeah, if you could also just send it to the entire committee, that would be great. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Franson. And Ms. Swenson-Clatt, I think this is a great line of questions. And so I guess I'm noting for Ms. Sommerfeld as well, who does great work connecting DHS and our committee, that this would be a helpful helpful information to have. I know it may take a little while to pull it together, but I think it's a really important point. We are in our closing minutes. Representative Wasley, is it something real quick? Otherwise, I think we can probably address on Thursday. But Representative Wasley, what?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to know, I saw in Ms. Swenson-Clatt's presentation that the retain grantees, all of them were able to receive funding, which is great news. Do you have a number for how many grantees got awards the first round? That was my question.
Ms. Swenson-Clatt, and if you need to send us that information or follow up too, perhaps.
I think I do, Mr. Chair and Representative
Wadley. Let's do that for timing and for nothing else. I do want to make sure to land the plane on time. I just want to give a big thank you to the DHS team. I will note, I totally understand Representative Damas' frustration with the time it's taken on those child care service grants. I will note, in the public safety area that I also work in, there's some money that we had allocated in June that is still, it's still going to be another couple months before it gets out. And part of it is just there's a lot going on. But I want to thank you both for your work in general and certainly for putting this together. Getting an update of each of these pieces is really helpful. I guess we've given you some more homework to do today. Send that to us. Members, I'm just a heads up, as I noted at the beginning. So next Tuesday, the 8th at 5:30, we're doing a joint hearing at the Masonic Institute for the Developing Brain at the University of Minnesota Medical School, along with the Jobs and Workforce Development Committee. If you can just let the committee administrator, Ms. Spreck, know if you plan to attend in person. I want to emphasize for members and staff, attending virtually is absolutely a path that folks can take. It's a facility is very well set up for that. For people who do attend, we'll have social distancing and masking. But again, if you want to attend virtually, you're very welcome to do so. I want to encourage staff to feel very free to do that as well, if everyone's comfort level. I do plan that we may well have a hearing next Friday, the 11th in the morning, tentative time at 10:30. So next week it would be 5:30 on Tuesday, our regular meeting slot on Thursday, and then Friday morning, and we'll be getting more information out. Looking for any final questions from anyone, but it's been really good to be back with you all today. Remember that on Thursday, then, we're gonna continue hearing from state agencies about the funding, some of the budgetary decisions and getting updates and all. So I hope everyone has a great day. And with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.